This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Jeff Rubin Show. I am Jeff Rubin, and today, on the old Skype-a-ma-phone, I've got Nelson Dellis, two-time USA memory champion, and, as far as I know, the only memory champion to have scaled Mount Everest. Welcome to the show, Nelson.
Thank you so much, Jeff. Glad to be here.
Is that correct? Are you the only memory champion to have scaled Mount Everest? I don't even know how to begin researching something like that.
From what I know, I don't know anybody else who's even a climber and a memory athlete.
It seems like it would have come up. Someone would have mentioned it to you if there was
totally,
another one.
Totally,
so memory athlete, that's the term.
Yeah, memory athlete or mental athlete. One of the two.
So I think a lot of people that are listening, they're just learning right now as we're saying these words that there is such a thing as memory athletes or mental athletes. So can you describe the event where you were crowned memory champ?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, people are always surprised when they hear that there's a championship for memorizing stuff. First of all, they think it's the game where you match two cards and you flip them over, the game of memory, but it's actually, that's not even one of the events. It's actually a full, so the U.S. Memory Championship is held every year in New York City in about March, and it's basically a full day event where in the morning, whoever wants to sign up can sign up, and there's four events. It's memorizing random names and faces, so they give you a bunch of pictures of random strangers with crazy names, and then you got 15 minutes to memorize as many of them as you can.
That's so practical. That's so like, that's something that comes up in everyday life that people struggle with.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's probably the number one useful thing I've gotten out of this is how to remember people's names.
So they give you a stack of just headshots. What's like an average score for this? How many is a good number to memorize?
Well, so you get a point for the first and another point for the last name. So you could just do first names, just last names, or both. But if you get touching 100 points is pretty good.
So you have how long to memorize all those faces?
15 minutes.
So to memorize 100 names and faces in 15 minutes is pretty good.
Yeah, and so that's more like 50 actual faces, but you got first and last name, so that would give you like 100 points, 100 individual names.
What's your strategy there? Do you do just first names, just last names? Sounds like you do both.
I go for both.
But there are some people who just do first names and can do twice as many of them that way?
Exactly. Yeah, it's more quick. It's quicker to just go through them. First names and last names can be kind of tricky because they're words that, or they're basically words, but there might be things that you've never seen before. Like a Joe or a Bob is common, but I don't know, Schusterman or something might not be something you remember as easy.
And who are these idiots? Who are these poor folk who are, they got to be the headshots? Or how can I become one of them?
Good question. I mean, they try to make it as completely random as possible. I mean, if you have famous people in there, like celebrities and stuff, or yourself, someone might have an advantage because they know who that is. So they tap into these databases with totally random, they're not random people. They exist, but they're from these banks of photos that are not supposed to be famous people.
The NSA, they went to the NSA and they just got a list.
It's a lot of babies, always a lot of babies.
Are baby faces harder? Because they're a little less distinct, right?
They all look the same, yeah. No hair, cute, and it's just their face,
So how do you do that? Like, what are you doing when you do that?
Yeah, I mean, so we will talk about this throughout the show, but the basic technique for memorizing anything really is to come up with a crazy picture in your head for whatever you're trying to memorize. And the idea is that we tend to memorize things better when it's crazy, out of the norm, sexual, violent, just something absurd, that's not normal. And so what we do, most of us do for remembering names, is we take the name and we turn it into maybe something it sounds like or something it reminds us of, and we really take that idea home. Like, we go crazy with these pictures. We add, like, blood and goo and all this
Hopefully
stuff.
Hopefully not to the baby ones.
Well, it's weird to say that, but sometimes you do, and that's the thing is you remember that.
Yeah, like, yeah, that makes sense.
So, and then you tie that image somehow to a distinct thing on this person's face. That's how you kind of tie it together so that when you see the person's face next time, it gives you back that image that you somehow stuck mentally on their face, and it gives you back the name.
And what are some distinguishing facial marks that you might hook on to?
Yeah. I mean, you get good at it because sometimes some people can look the same and it's like people are plain or some people are, you know, nothing special going on. So for the most part, I mean, a scar, a mole, bushy eyebrows, a long flowy hair, whatever, you know, whatever comes out at you most. And when you get good at it, you can kind of choose little marks, you know, on a person's face. Yeah, it's a skill. It's something you got to practice, really. Yeah.
Do you have any practical advice for people who struggle with that, like myself and I think most people?
Yeah. Honestly, the biggest piece of advice I can give, and this will help the majority of people remember names at least by 50%, is just paying attention or just trying. Making the
yeah, it sounds so simple, but that's a good point.
I know. Yeah. So, I mean, like, when you're going to a party or an event or a dinner, whatever. Make it a goal to yourself, just or make it a game, you know? Be like, I'm going to remember 10 people's names or everybody at the table's names. And just by you saying that to yourself, you'll find that your memory is actually a lot better just because you're making this effort and you're focusing. Basically, the techniques that we use are these elaborate systems of just intense focus. I mean, for me to take all this time to convert a name into a picture and really study this person's face, it's just me paying a lot of attention, you know?
Mm-hmm. So is that something you're good at then, focus?
Yeah. I mean, that's, I think, something I also learned getting into this memory world as well is, you know, learning how to sit down and stare at something for a large amount of time without, you know, getting up to touch my phone or go on the internet, you know, that's a rare skill these days. So it definitely helps with the practice I do. It helps that.
How long have you been training and how'd you get into it?
Let's see now. I guess I started about four years ago. Yeah.
About that's pretty new. Years. You know, I think like, yeah. I actually assumed, you know, you're operating at the highest level. I assumed you've been working on it for much longer. Like, no one wins the figure skating championship after 4 years of figure skating.
That's the thing. That's the crazy thing about this memory thing. I mean, you learn the techniques, which is, like, super easy. You can read about it in a book or online anywhere. And then it's just practice. And you get really good really fast. More than you might think, you know? Because when I started, I was like, ah, I have a crappy memory. You know, maybe I can do this, but never at the level of these champion guys. And then within 6 months, I mean... And this is me doing it every day, but still, I was up at the top, you know? And I don't know if that's because it's actually something we can all do very easily, or if it's because, you know, this is still kind of an underground world, and I don't know if the competition is, you know, really saturated at the top yet.
But before you started training, you were someone who considered themselves as having a bad memory. Again, I think most people think that about themselves. You know, memories just,
exactly.
It's hard to hold on to. So what made you start training then?
Right. So the reason I started is because of my grandmother. She had Alzheimer's disease, and she passed away in 2009, about the time I started getting into this memory stuff. And once she passed away, I was kind of like, well, let me see how far I can take all this, these techniques that I've just learned. And, you know, maybe I can actually turn these techniques and skills into habits that just happen throughout my life. And maybe when I'm older, I won't end up the same way, you know? So that just drove me to do it. And the more I did it, the better I got. And it's one of these things that the more you do it and you see just how powerful your brain can be, and you had no idea before, you just crave getting stronger in your mind, you know? So you don't want to give it up. You keep training and you get faster and you just want more of it. It's almost like this superpower that you've just unleashed and you don't want to let it go.
It's interesting because it sounds just like a traditional physical exercise. You know, you do it for 6 months, you realize you can run faster, you can lift heavier things than you ever did before. But because the results aren't necessarily visual or aren't physical,
exactly.
I think a lot of people just assume it isn't real or it doesn't exist. But what you're saying is you can train your brain just like you can train your arms or whatever.
Totally. And that's, yeah, it's hard to, I mean, with going to the gym, you can see results like on your body in the mirror. But just with the mental thing, it's hard to grasp, you know, like to measure it almost, or to really believe it. And, you know, the way I train, I mark every day how I'm improving in each discipline. And, you know, that was important for me, because then I can see, you know, I am getting stronger. My brain is growing muscles, if you want to think of it that way.
What were you doing besides memory at this time? Were you someone, because it sounds like you just jumped right into the deep end. You just started doing it every day right away. Is that something you did a lot throughout your life?
Yeah, no. I mean, when I was younger and through like high school and parts of college, I was always one of these guys that just, I would love to try new things, and I would get into something new every week and then swear to be awesome at it and then kind of get okay at it and drop it. And I thought this would be one of the same type of thing, that I'd get into it and be like, yeah, cool, and drop it. But I don't know. I guess something clicked. I guess it was my grandmother, and I just wanted to see something through, you know. And then after a while, I was like, you know, I'm going to see if I can win this championship. And that kind of, you know, built on itself.
Did you see yourself getting better at memory quicker than you got better at other things? Like, were you pretty immediate, yeah, like, you know what, I could really run with this thing?
Yeah, yeah. And I don't think that's just me. I think that's really capable. Anybody can do that. It's just a matter of sitting down and actually trying to do it. But yeah, the results come really quick, and not in a, oh, this is kind of cool way. It's more like, holy crap, I had no idea that this was even possible. Why doesn't anybody else know about this, you know? It's like you struck gold.
I'm just curious, have you ever played Brain Age on the DS?
Funny you should say that. Nintendo actually approached me to do a little commercial with them, and I played. They gave me a version of the game to play and just try and master, because a lot of it was memory-based. And, yeah.
Yeah, I think that might be the most popular application of a lot of the concepts that you're talking about, because that game's all about train your brain. You'll get better at it every day. It was extremely successful. They sold millions and millions of them. And I think it's pretty fun. And, you know, I don't have the focus or the discipline to stick with it. I got it, and I probably played it for, like, I might have played it pretty close to every day for like a month or something like that before I lost interest. But you could see yourself getting better at it. But I never knew, I never could feel that I was like really getting smarter, or my brain was really getting sharper, if I was just getting better at, you know, simple math equations in this game. But you're telling me I was, and I just like moved on to playing Contra instead.
Yeah. No, I really think that doing those kind of exercises do help. You know, I mean, I'm sure you saw yourself get faster at some of them, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You do. Yeah.
So, and I mean, obviously some of them aren't obvious how they would translate to real life, but and that's the same with some of the things I train for memory, like memorizing a pack of cards. When am I ever, I mean, unless I'm in a casino or something like that, but for everyday life, I'm not going to memorize cards. They don't just fly at me while I'm walking down the street. But I think that's one of the things I do every day religiously. I just practice memorizing cards. And I think just doing that skill, just it applies to so many things. It's more of like helping me keep that focus, the training of the focus, and being able to turn things into images really quickly, and just this flexibility of the mind, you know?
And I think that has a parallel with physical exercise too, because there's no practical reason to make your biceps really large. It's like, yeah, you're a little bit stronger, but like it doesn't actually help you in your day-to-day life. Exactly. But, you know, if you're working on just general physical fitness, that does come up, and you can lead perhaps a richer, fuller life.
Yeah. I mean, you work on specific muscles. You know, you do these Olympic lifting movements, which, you know, try to emulate maybe certain situations you might move your body in real life, but for the most part, no. But overall, you know, you're making individual muscles stronger, and as a unit, it's helping you be stronger in life, I guess, you know, So,
what does memorizing a deck of cards actually entail? Because you are, correct me if I'm wrong, the world record holder?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Not the world record holder. Just the U.S. one.
Okay. So what is that record? What does memorizing a deck of cards entail?
So the U.S. record, and this is done in the U.S. competition, was 63 seconds. I did this a couple of years ago. But it's not close to my best nowadays. It's just hard to do it in competition sometimes, because there's so much – pressure.
What is 63 seconds to what?
Oh, sorry. So a shuffle deck of cards, 52 playing cards. I get 63 seconds. I have 5 minutes, but I can stop the timer when I'm done. But 63 seconds to look at the whole pack of cards and then put it down after those 63 seconds. So it's just how long I looked at it to memorize it.
And then you recite in order the cards in the deck.
Exactly, afterwards, yeah.
And that seems even more challenging than faces, because cards, you know, I guess there's two colors, four suits. Like, there are not a lot of unique things to map onto them. So what's going on in your brain there?
Right, so that cards are super abstract. At least with names, you can maybe, you know, if you see a Joe and you have a buddy named Joe, you can picture him, you know?
Mm-hmm.
For cards, like, you look at seven of spades, what's the seven of spades? It's a number and another word. But what we do for cards is we actually assign an image. I do people, my family, friends, celebrities. I assign a person to each card. And this is just something I had to learn. Some are intuitive, like King of Hearts is my dad, because Hearts is family, and he's the king of the family. Queen of Hearts is my mom. What else? King of Diamonds to me is James Bond, because I think of, I don't know, it looks like, I just picture a King of Diamonds always in the casino and James Bond style, you know?
Well, the face cards have a little personality, but what's like the Four of Spades?
Four of Spades is Super Mario. And so for things like that, which aren't as obvious, I have some system of turning the four into a letter and then the spades, I take the S. So I have basically an initial, and for that case, it's DS. So I thought of a Nintendo DS, and the first thing that comes to mind with Nintendo is Super Mario.
And so you have 52 of these, and they're always the same. Like, you've been using the same ones for years?
Yeah. And so some listeners might be saying, okay, well, how does he do that so fast? And it sounds really complicated. But over time, it's basically a language I'm learning. And when I see four of spades, I don't even think twice about it. It looks like Super Mario. I've done it so many times that it just is that person. It's like I'm looking at a photograph of Super Mario.
Does that help you when you're playing cards?
yeah, it does.
And how does it help you? Like, you can like tell where the four of spades is in the deck. You just have like greater deck awareness.
Yeah, and that's something I've had to train a little bit too. But basically, I mean,
do I hear you ruffling a deck of cards right now?
Yes, I have them in my hands. Here we go. There you go. Four of spades is really useful. I'm talking about blackjack, but remembering where the aces are obviously is very useful. So, yeah.
And so you did it in 62 or 63 seconds, you said. Obviously, I need to work on my memory.
Yeah, exactly. No. So 63 seconds in the U.S. competition. In the international event, I did it just last December in 40.65 seconds.
This is crazy. Like, if you did it in 20 minutes, I'd be very impressed.
Well, that's the thing. So the first time I ever did it, where I sat down and was like, I'm going to try this, took me 20 minutes. To go through one deck. And then the next time it was like 12 minutes. And then I slowly brought my time down to like 5 minutes. And it was just amazing how quickly you can get fast at this.
How long do these memories last? Like, can you do the deck again the next morning? Can you do it again today? Yeah.
So the cool thing about the technique, and there's a little more to it than turning things into pictures, it's also how you store it in your mind. You can keep things for as long as you want. Basically, the technique gets stuff in your head really quickly, and then from then on, it's just a matter of review. But the way that you put stuff in your mind, it lends itself really well to being able to be reviewed in your mind without having to actually have the deck of cards or whatever you're trying to memorize. So you can, you know, you memorize the cards and then say, you're challenging me to remember it tomorrow morning. All I'm going to do is every once in a while go through it in my head. And the more times I review something, and this is a science, the more you review something, the more likely it is that you're going to remember it for longer in your life, long term.
Is this fun for you? Because I think my absolute nightmare is being sat down in a room and being told I have to memorize the order of a deck of cards.
Yeah, right. And most of the events, if you were watching it as a spectator, you'd be bored out of your mind just because you're just watching people stare at things for long periods of time in absolute silence.
Do people watch it as spectators?
They do. I mean, the cards is actually pretty exciting because, you know, you can see it and people are going pretty fast. But
I've actually seen a mentalist, which is like, I guess, a discipline of illusion or magic. I don't know how to describe it. But I've seen that performed on stage by a mentalist, but he didn't do it in 40 seconds.
Yeah, and sometimes those guys are sneaky. They have, you know, sleight of hands with their cards.
Sure, sure.
There's a little rift with these kind of guys.
I got the impression we were being sold that he was legitimately memorizing it, and I understand that it's possible, you know, just in talking to you, so I chose to believe him. It made the show more fun, but it's certainly possible. So do you still go through the deck of cards daily? Is it like, I don't know, maybe fun's not the right word. Is it like exercise? Is it routine?
Part of it's routine, but honestly, I love it. I love the feeling that, A, I can do this, you know, and I don't want to stop doing it. And B, you know, and this is weird to say, but after having done it so long, I just love getting in that place, like seeing all these people interact as I see them in these cards, you know, it just, there's something comforting about it. It's like my happy place.
A zone. I imagine your brain, I have no idea how brains work, but I imagine your brain gets locked in like, I don't know, some sort of a zone or some kind. It's like your brain is operating in a different way than mine is right now, or you know, yours even usually is. And that could maybe be relaxing or just have a good feeling to it.
Yeah. And it's funny because most people just assume that now I can remember everything, and they're like, oh, I better be careful what I say because you're going to remember it. And that's not the case. I actually forget a ton of stuff still, probably more than ever, because I think it's just my mind's always occupied with other things.
I bet you get unending shit when you forget a birthday.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, I had a roommate in college that got into a doctorate program at Harvard. And so, like, the last 6 months we were in college, like, any absent-minded thing he did at all, like, everyone was like, oh, and he's going to Harvard.
Yeah.
I imagine you have a similar thing where it's like, and this is the memory champion.
I know. I get so much crap for it. It's pretty funny.
But those skills, like memorizing a deck of cards, doesn't help necessarily directly anyway. It sounds like remembering birthdays, not forgetting your keys, that kind of thing.
No, but for the cards, the system I use for that translates really well to numbers. And numbers is another thing that I'm really good at, which that helps a lot, kind of like the names. I mean, you give me a phone number, you give me a birthday, I'm usually going to remember it pretty easily using this system.
So you store someone's birthday in your brain. You don't file it as March 4th. You file it as, like, I don't know, Super Mario Beet Salad or whatever it is you put together.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And the same idea goes with numbers as with the cards, is that the numbers are abstract symbols, you know. Most of us look at a number and it frightens us, or it just doesn't really mean anything. You'll find that some sports lovers, you know, when they look at numbers, maybe they see the jersey number of their favorite baseball player or a stat, you know? So that's kind of what we're doing. We emulate, you know, that to the nth degree, so that when we look at these numbers, they actually have some meaning rather than being these abstract concepts.
So we kind of got sidetracked. I really wanted to hear about all the events. There was the pictures with faces.
Yeah.
Is the deck of cards an event?
That's another one.
And
yeah.
What is the world record that you have to beat?
It's 21.19 seconds.
What? I can't even flip through a deck of cards that fast, like, sounds, not memorizing them.
I know. It's a German guy, Simon Reinhardt. He's awesome. And he's been doing it, I guess, about the same amount of time I have. But the Germans have these really well-thought-out systems that are just really complex and that's what's allowed them to get a lot faster.
So are the Germans dominant at this, like, say, Jamaicans are in track and field? Like, that's something their country is good at?
Yeah, they are the Jamaican sprinters of the memory world.
What are they doing differently that we're not doing in America?
I don't know. Well, part of it has to do with the fact that Americans got into the game a little late. Like, they've had the World Memory Championships, which usually take place in Europe, for 21 years, I think. And the U.S. championship's only been around for 15 or 16. So we're a bit behind. I'm trying to catch up. And I'm getting in there. But, I mean, those guys, I mean, I think the fact that they're very, I mean, it's stereotypical to say, but German, they're very orderly and strict in their regiments. I mean,
right, sure.
They do their job really well.
Is there a large community amongst the memory athletes?
I mean, it's growing. It's still bit obscure. Most people don't know about it, but it's not huge. No.
How many people are competing?
In the US Championship, we get about 50 people, and then the Worlds can get up to about 100, but that's, everywhere.
Is this something, again, like traditional athletics, where youth is a factor, and, you reach a point where, you just can't compete with 20-year-olds or whatever it is?
I feel like there has to be some prime age, right, to be quick in the mind, or quickest in the mind, but, you'll see these competitions, such a variety of ages, from as young as, 8, all the way to, I think oldest guy once was 60-something. And so that 60-year-old guy was actually pretty good.
How is the 8-year-old?
They're okay, but there are some really good 12-year-olds, for example. It all comes down to how much you practice. That's really what I think.
Again, just like traditional athletics.
Yeah.
So finally, I got to know, what are these other events? We got faces, we got cards, we got memorizing numbers.
Yep, and for the numbers, you get 5 minutes to memorize as many digits as possible. They give you a big sheet. It's 500 digits long, and you just try to get through as much of it as you can in the 5 minutes.
This sounds like a nightmare. What's a good score? How many digits can you get?
A good score is 100, but my record, the U.S. record, is 303 digits.
Oh, my God. So you memorize, and is it, again, the same type of thing where each digit, or 1 through 9, are they all represented by something too?
Yeah, and I've taken that a bit further to kind of get better, is every 3 digits is actually one person for me.
So you have a person, you have 999, or I guess maybe 1,000 people?
Yeah, that's right.
So, can I just throw some numbers at you?
Go for it, yeah.
412.
So that's Dwight Schrute from, what do you call it, The Office.
How is it Dwight Schrute?
It's complicated. But when I started, I started with a 2-digit system. So I only had 100 people. And that's kind of the standard that most memory athletes will start with. It's a bit more manageable. And the way they do it is, you'll take the first, you'll have some system to translate all digits 0 through 9 to a letter. So for me, let's take 12, for example. Well, that's a bad example. Let's take 46, because we did Super Mario before. 4 is a D to me. 6 is an S, because 6 is very S-like. 4 is a D because it's the fourth letter of the alphabet. And this is just a system I decided. Anybody can create their own. And so I have DS, same kind of thing with the cards. That's Nintendo, Super Mario. So when I see 46, that's Super Mario. Some of the numbers which just feel like someone, like 23, could be Michael Jordan because that was his number. 24 for me is Kobe Bryant. 34 is Shaquille O'Neal. What else?
But what happens once we get the triple digits and we don't have jersey numbers anymore?
Yeah, exactly. So 12, and this will get to 412 in a second. 12 is me because that's my favorite number. It was my sports number in high school. So what I did when I was expanding the system is I decided, okay, all the 12s, so 112, 212, 312, will be some type of category. And 012 will just be the original 12, me. So for some reason, I guess because it was one of my favorite shows at the time, it was The Office. So I made all the 12s off The Office characters. So 112 is Michael Scott. 212 is Andy Bernard. And then 412 is Dwight Schrute. And the reason 412 is him because the 4 is a D, and that's kind of the trigger. So I remember it's Dwight.
There was almost no lag between me naming the number and you saying Dwight Schrute. So something works here. Do you have these all written out somewhere, or do you remember it?
No. I remember it. And that's part of getting faster, is being able to see that number. And obviously for 1,000 digits, or 1,000 different triplets, that's a bit slower. You have to be fast at that to be fast at memorizing numbers. So that's one of the exercises I do, is I just go through triplets of numbers and try to say, okay, that's this guy, that's this guy, that's this guy.
Can I throw some more at you?
Let's go. Yeah, some of them you'll see a bit more lag, but let's try.
All right, 311.
311, that's Kournikova, Anna Kournikova.
How is it at Kournikova?
So 11 is AA, that's the first letter of the alphabet, one, as Andre Agassi. So all the 11s are tennis players, and the 311, so 3 is kind of, it's C or a K sound, so that's why you get the Kournikova.
All right, what about 137?
That's Will Smith. So 37 is Bruce Willis. So all the 37s are kind of like action movie stars. And Will Smith. So I don't know. Some of these are just things I've made.
Whatever works, you know. It's just like, 137, that's Will Smith.
Over time, you know, I had a – well, when I first started, I was sticking to the rules. But over time, you know, you find that some aren't as memorable as others. So you kind of tweak it to fit what you like.
Are you ever tempted, you know, like when one's difficult to be like, you know what, Will Smith isn't totally working anymore. I'm going to make that George Clooney instead.
Yeah, that's totally happened. For example, like the – Nine of Hearts used to be what's his name? I don't some.
This is why he's not the Nine of Hearts anymore.
Exactly, Nathaniel Hawthorne, right? He's a writer, or whatever. Just because I had a nine as an N, and Hearts is an H, so I had those initials. But then I realized I don't even know what he looks like, so I couldn't really picture it. So I changed it at one point. My girlfriend was like, "My favorite number is 9." I was like, "Perfect, I'll make you the Nine of Hearts." So. That was a lot easier to picture, obviously.
Right. So then when you see this long string of digits, you're converting it together to like Anna Kournikova is playing tennis with Dwight Schrute and Will Smith. And that's how you like start to recite
exactly.
It back.
Yeah. And there's this cool technique called person, action, object. And so basically all the people that I have, I'm getting ahead of myself. I don't want to make it too complicated, but
let's make it complicated. I love it.
So let's just say my two-digit system that I started with. So all of those guys from 00 to 99, I gave them an action and an object as well. And something that wasn't hard to remember, just something obvious about them. So like 11 was Andre Agassi. What would be his action?
Playing tennis.
Right. And his object would be?
Screaming at the ref.
Or just more simply a racket.
Right.
Could be whatever, but that's what I chose. So what I do now, and so all 00 to 99 have this. So what I do is actually I do a 3-2-2 digit grouping. So the first three digits of a set are the person, right? I have 1,000 people, and then the next two is the action, and then the next two is the object. And then I squeeze that all together and make some crazy little scene, and that's my image.
And I imagine because the scenes are very random and crazy that it is memorable. It's memorable.
It makes it memorable, yeah.
Who are some of the more obscure people in your mental deck of 1,000?
They range from my close friends to school teachers from when I was a kid to cartoon characters from like Dragon Ball Z, Looney Tunes.
What's a Dragon Ball Z number?
70. So the main character, Goku, right? Is that Goku?
Yeah.
Is 70. So all the 70s are different characters from there.
So like who are the other Dragon Ball characters and what numbers are they?
Let's see. So 170 is Trunks, 270 is Bulma, 370 is Piccolo.
Now which version of Trunks are we talking about here? Is this the older Trunks who experienced Cell's Rampage or the younger version of Trunks?
See, I didn't watch the whole thing through. I picture Trunks with his short purple hair.
Yeah, I think that – honestly, I'm not that big a – I'm not a Dragon Ball Z expert. That's like the one plot line I know. I think that's the older one with the sword.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the older one.
So when you're trying to come up with 1,000 people, you're going to dip into things that aren't like your expertise.
Yeah,
right?
I'm not sure I know 1,000 people, like fictional or real.
Yeah, and I mean that took me a good while to come up with. Coming up with 100 is pretty quick. Most people can do that easily, but 1,000, oh man, took a while.
Is there anyone working off a 4-digit system and they have 9,999 people in their head?
I think the German guy Simon has something like this, but he hasn't learned it in a way where you could shout out the number and he knows it instantly. I think he kind of improvises, and I think that's why he's so successful, is because he didn't have to spend all this time getting perfect at a 10,000 person system. He just kind of like knows it pretty good, and then he makes a lot of it up as he goes.
Are these memory athletes all of a certain – are they all a certain type of person? Are they all different types of – is there no one type of memory athlete?
Yeah, it varies. I mean, you might think it's just nerds, you know, but obviously – okay, we might all be nerds because we're into this. And we're willing to practice it.
Yeah, I have news for you. You are all nerds. I'm afraid that you are all nerds.
Yeah, but I mean, we're all into different things, and we're not all socially awkward, as most people might assume. Some of us are, but Simon's like a real estate guy. He's super chill. I like to climb mountains. I like to hang out with friends. I'm normal, I feel.
Are there many women competing? I feel like mostly we've talked about men thus far.
Yeah, I think the first 3 years of the USA Memory Championship was a woman, Tatiana Cooley. She doesn't compete anymore, but she got it started. And there's a bunch of women in the world championships, not so much in the U.S. one. I don't know why, but they come and go. I wish there'd be more. I feel like they'd just rock it.
So, okay, so I think we cover numbers now. Yeah. How many events are there?
So in the morning, there's four. So we did three there, the cards.
You're doing these all in a row. That didn't even occur to me. Like, I feel like after I do the card thing, I'm going home and taking a nap, but you just got to do the faces right after that.
Right. It's all back to back. And then, so the fourth one of the morning is poetry. And they give you a random one they make up, a 50-line poem.
Oh, my God. I want to talk to the person who's in charge of writing the 50-line poem so badly.
It is always the worst poem in the world. It's always about fluffy dogs or spring mornings or balloons. It's the worst.
Do they – not that all poems have to, but do they rhyme?
Mostly they do, the ones they give you. But I think there's been a couple times where they didn't really rhyme. Yeah, they make it – and the hard part about it is you got to get you get points for every word correct in each line, but also punctuation and capitalization and format and all that. So
now what's your strategy here? Because before we're talking about abstract representations of numbers or playing cards, but these are real words. These are, I'm imagining anyway, these are like coherent thoughts, or at least they're something like it anyway. So is the strategy completely different?
It's somewhat similar. You know, some people will go and do word for word. They'll turn the word into an image and make a little story. But if you have a long poem, that's going to take ages and you're not going to get very far. So what I do is I try to take like a verse, a line or half a line, like a group of words, like an idea or a phrase, and turn that into a picture. And that's tricky. That takes a bit of practice. And sometimes it's not always guaranteed that I'll write it outright. And then I have keywords like and or, you know, and I have images for some of those keywords and punctuation marks just to kind of help remember those little filler things.
Do you remember any lines from any of these poems and how you broke that down? I'm just trying to get a handle on it. I'm having difficulty imagining it.
No. I forget them as quickly as I can because I don't want to keep
– Is that a thing, like flushing to make room? Is that something you have to worry about?
Yeah, because and here's another thing. So
how do you do that? Because I can't tell you how much crap I know that I would love to forget.
It's not that easy because for when I'm trying to memorize and I'm making my effort, I actually use and this is the part that I was going to explain a memory palace. So when I'm memorizing and making all these pictures, I have to store them somewhere in my mind so I can go back and find them. That's really the problem with people memorizing these days is they can maybe memorize something or try to memorize something, but they may not know where they put it in their mind, you know? It's not like you can save it like on a computer and you know it's in this file and you can get it whenever you want. You just kind of memorize it and, you know, hopefully it comes back to you when you need it, and if not, then what can you do? So the technique is basically picture a place, a palace or a house with rooms and things that you know very well, like your house or your apartment or a childhood home, whatever. And the idea is you walk through it mentally. Okay, our minds are very good at remembering and picturing this spatial information. And you store each image that you come up with for memorizing whatever it is along a path throughout this palace or house. And so, like, you know, if I'm memorizing 311, Anna Kournikova, and those are the first three digits of my number, I'm going to start at the front door of my house. I'm going to picture Anna Kournikova bent over in a really hot tennis skirt opening my door, my front door. So I interact the two, right? And then I move to the next place.
Maybe I hope the Nine of Hearts doesn't show up when that's going on.
Maybe I'll add her to the mix. Who knows? No, I'm kidding. Maybe I'm not. Anyways, then you go to the next place, maybe the hallway, and that's, you know, whatever. It's 412. So there's Dwight Schrute in the middle of my hallway, you know, in his tie, who knows, sticking a pencil in something or pulling a prank on Jim or something like that, you know?
This is some Inception shit, because that movie has a lot of, like, yeah, where the memories are stored, and they if you feel it. Did you like that movie a lot? Did you find yourself appreciating it a little more? Totally.
Yeah, I definitely got into that for that reason.
What part of that movie, like, stood out to you, and you were like, yep, that's how memories work?
When he's, like, walking through Paris with for the first time with that girl, you know, and he's like, things are blowing up, the city's folding on each other. I was like, that's the kind of shit that happens inside of my head when I'm walking through these places.
So how do you flush memories out?
Right.
How do you close a wing of the palace?
Right. So before that, I mean, to recall it, all you have to do is walk back through the place. So you start back walking through the front door. There's Anna Kournikova. Then you walk in. There's Dwight Schrute, etc. And that's how you recall stuff. Then afterwards, you know, you don't want to – it depends. You want to keep that number or you don't. So if you do, then this is when that review comes in. I can go to bed, and before I go to bed, in my mind, I just close it and I walk through the place and review who was there. That's how you review things using this technique. And the more times I do that, the more permanent that number is going to stay in my mind. And I know where it is. It's in that house. But if I want to forget it, all it is just not thinking about it. And at first it's hard because this technique is so powerful. Shit just stays in there even though you don't mean it to. You can't get it out. But the more you reuse these journeys through these palaces, the more the better you get at learning how to forget quickly. So for cards, for example, I have tons of journeys that I use, and I cycle through them so that, you know, I don't use the same one every time because that can get confusing. But
like Inception, that's a thing in Inception too.
Yeah. So I cycle through them, and then by the time I come back to use the same one, it's forgotten itself. It's clear. It's an empty house, you know?
Okay. So that's how we work on poems.
Yeah.
We covered poems. Are there any more events?
So that's the morning. So there are more events, but only the top eight who have amassed the highest top eight scores total will advance the afternoon round, which is basically a playoff. There's three rounds on stage.
And that's just arm wrestling, or is it memory-based? It's probably memory-based, right?
It's brain wrestling, yeah. Yeah, so they go on stage, so it's a little more exciting this time. You're not watching people stare at papers. They're actually...
So all those other events, you're doing them in front of people. You're not just like in a room by yourself going through headshots.
Yeah, it's an open hall. Yeah, exactly. And spectators watch on the side. Obviously, they respect your space, but they can watch, yeah.
These are a little more public. It's getting a little exciting. We're down to the final eight. What are those events?
Yeah, so the first one is random words. So they give you, and this is done backstage, we memorize a list. There's 200 random words on a sheet of paper, and we get 15 minutes to memorize as many of them as we can.
I think that's actually in Brain Age, too. I think it's one of the mini games within Brain
Age.
Right.
Exactly, yeah. And then, but the order is important because we're going to do them in order. So then we come back on stage, and one by one, we have to say, you know, we start at the first word, and the first person says that one. And until, I believe, three people make a mistake, then we advance. And if you make a mistake, you're out. So the first three people that make a mistake are eliminated.
Wow. So again, these are words. How do these go into your brain? How are these filed?
Same thing, and words are easier than numbers and cards because most words, you know, we know English. That's we know the language. Words have meaning, so we just picture some crazy picture for the word. So if I see a seahorse, you know, I can picture a seahorse, but I take it to another level. I try to make this seahorse, you know, do something a little more exciting than just sitting there. And it also depends where I've put it in my memory palace. I have them interact with that environment. And so that path along a place in that palace preserves the order of the words.
For the international competitions, are they all number based? Because if you were there were words, and it seems like if the person whose native language they're in would have an advantage.
That's true. No, they you can recommend your native language. They do different. They do the same words, but they translate them.
Okay. So when you're doing the headshots, are you all doing the same headshots?
Yeah.
So everything is like leveled, so it's all fair.
Yeah, and in the international competition, they actually use international names, which basically means take the most complicated, like, Indian name and give it a last name of like a Chinese person. So they're really difficult.
That does sound. Who is putting these on? Who is hosting this competition?
There are these, I mean, the World Memory Championships put on by this World Memory Sports Council, just a bunch of guys that started it 20 years ago. And then over here, Tony Dottino, he's just a memory kind of teacher guy, consultant, who one day was like, we need to make this into a competition, and that's it.
What is, you know, we're about to get to the grand finale. What is the prize for actually winning this thing?
Glory.
Is it glory?
No, yeah. I mean, the last 2 years we had a little sponsor and got, I think, well, it was $1,000. I don't remember.
So but, it's mostly glory then.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I mean, I've gotten a lot of attention just from winning. Like, the media is super interested in this every year. So for that alone, I mean, it's been worth it.
Yeah, I mean, I went to your website. It seems like you've done, this is not your first interview. You've done a million of the, you know, media. Yeah. Because it is, well, I think what makes it interesting is it's like, if you are the best roller derby person in the world, I don't know anything about roller derby. Like, I can't even imagine what it's like. But remembering things is something we all do. Like, everyone exactly. knows what it's like to try to memorize something. So that you're really good at it, I want to know everything about how you got there.
Yeah, 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 exactly.
Is physical training a piece of it too? It seems like your brain is part of your body, so I imagine like yeah. physical health and diet play into it too, right?
For sure, and I'm a huge advocate of that. I mean, some people just do the memory thing and that's it. They don't really care. But I'm like, if I'm trying to keep my brain healthy, if that's my main goal, then keeping it active by doing these memory tests and focus, you know, focusing all the time and training – that's one thing, but also how I feed my body and my brain and how I keep blood flow to it, which is exercise. So I'm all about those three for sure. I mean, I work out religiously. I watch what I eat. I try to eat a lot of those brain foods.
What are brain foods?
So things high in antioxidants, like blueberries, blackberries, spinach, those kind of things.
I was hoping you were going to be like chocolate chip cookies, French fries.
No, but I'm cocoa. Dark chocolate is actually very good for memory as well.
So it's a full thing for you. But there are people who just focus on the mental aspect. So there are like fat memory athletes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah. Okay.
And they're good. You know, they can still be good. But I feel like it makes a very good difference. I mean, you just feel good when all those things are aligned, you know?
So what is the final event?
All right, so after the words, there's one more and then the final. So the one in between is called, the tea party. So they basically get five audience members to come up, and they say things as if they were at a party. My name is so-and-so. My birthday is this date. My hobbies are X, Y, and Z. They basically list all this information, and we know what they're going to say, what categories they're going to say, but we don't know what they're going to say. And we get to hear it, and then we go backstage and we can actually study it on paper, and then we come out on stage, and then one by one those audience members come out randomly and we go through all that information again.
Wow, and this is again a very practical one where it's like
sure.
something regular people like myself struggle with all the time.
Yeah, and it's a lot of fun because the audience can get into it and they try.
You can play along from home a little bit on this one because it's not like that's something I've tried to do too. Like I've never tried to memorize anything longer than seven digits, but
right.
How good are you at Simon? You know Simon, like boop 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 boop.
I can go forever.
Really, you can go forever on Simon.
So what I do with Simon is, and that's the one with the four colors, or there's five.
I think it's four.
Some have five. You know, the different non-Simon versions. Yeah. Basically, I assign a number to each one, 1, 2, 3, 4. And then all I'm doing is I'm creating a sequence of numbers in my head. And those sequences of numbers are basically those people that I was telling you. I'm converting them to pictures. So,
and each person is three digits for you. So you're like stringing together these things, whereas like I'm doing it like one by one and like, you know.
Right. So I can do seven, you know, touches, and that's just one thing for me. So I can get pretty far.
So that's why that's not an event.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it would take forever. I mean, you know, those things, they go slow, right? You go one, you have to say the one. Then by the time you're at 10, you got to go and repeat the 10. Then so you're doing a lot there.
Yeah, yeah. So what's like a good score for the tea party? Just like not embarrassing yourself?
Well, the thing is, you just got to make it through.
Because you're just getting eliminated.
Yeah, you actually get three strikes in this one because it's a lot of information. So as soon as I think two people make those three strikes – they're out. and then we advance to the final round.
I'm really enjoying hearing what all the different events are, because I didn't imagine before we started talking that they'd all be so different, but like it sounds like they all involve slightly different strategies that kind of have like a core theme to it, but each one is its own event. Are there ones that you personally are better at or worse at? Like, what's your event? It sounds like maybe the cards.
Yeah, the cards and the numbers are really, since they're very similar in terms of what's underneath it for me, and those are the ones I love to practice the most. I've gotten really good at names and poetry as well, but to me the easiest are cards and numbers.
And what is the final, this time for real, what is the final event?
So the final is it's cards again, but now it's two decks of cards that we have to memorize in 5 minutes, or we have 5 minutes to memorize as much of those two decks as we can. And then we come back on stage, and it's basically the three remaining guys. We go each card at a time. We all memorize the same order, same decks, and it's just last man standing.
That sounds intense. Like, it sounds like, in addition to just having to work at it, the pressure must be like,
because
you're trying to, you know, focus, as we discussed, is such a big part of it. So how do you focus? How do you do that when you're like on a stage when, you know, the championship's on the line?
It's tough. I mean, I've been up there a few times now, so I'm more used to it than I was when I first was up there. But the best way to do it is to try and mimic that in practice and just do it so many times that when you go up there to do it, it's as automatic as it can be. Even though it's never possible to recreate it perfect, but that's typically how I've gotten through it, is just from doing it so many times that it just is smooth.
It sounds like you train like this is your full-time job. Is this your full-time job?
Yeah, it's become that. I was a software developer, but once I started doing really well in these competitions, so many people started asking me to teach them or coach them or do talks for them, and so I just started doing that, and now I'm self-employed, and I got to keep this up, so this is my... Yeah, you know, it's my job.
It sounds like you have a very engineering approach to this problem of solving these things.
Yeah, that's just my background. I studied math and physics, and that's how I approach everything in life.
I can't believe that we've been talking for almost an hour, and it has not come up yet that you climbed the Mount Everest of mental challenges by winning the memory championship, but you also climbed the Mount Everest of mountains by climbing Mount Everest. That's crazy. What tell me something about climbing Mount Everest. What do you remember from it? I don't even know where to begin on this one.
I know. It's a lot to say in just a short amount of time, but the reason I climbed it, first of all, was for this charity I started called Climb for Memory, and that's basically my want to share what I've learned on this journey of memory and to raise awareness and funds for Alzheimer's disease. So I wanted to do something more than just that, and climbing mountains has always been a passion of mine. So I decided to kind of say, okay, I'm going to climb these big mountains to kind of raise as much awareness as possible for Alzheimer's and shout it from the top of the world, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's why I go out and climb these big peaks. In 2011 was my first attempt at Everest, and I climbed it up until the Hillary Step. If you're familiar, it's about 280 feet short of the summit, and I turned around there having some issues with my oxygen mask. It was pretty frustrating.
That's like a poem, to be 280 feet short of the top of Mount Everest and have to turn back. I can't even imagine. It's 280 feet once you're all the way at the top of Mount Everest. 280 feet's a lot, I imagine.
Yeah, it sounds like nothing, but and you can see the summit is right there, but it's just brutal. You're on supplemental oxygen. You're in the death zone, they call it, and where planes fly. So every step you take, you have to breathe, you know, for 20 seconds. So climbing that much, that little feet is not an easy task. So
who are you doing it with? I don't know. I knew more about the memory championships than I do about I believe I could memorize a deck of cards in 20 seconds before I get to the top of Mount Everest. Like, who's with you? What are you, how long does it take?
Right. It's so it's 2 months expedition, and you know, I didn't do it straight away. I kind of started with basic mountaineering course years ago and loved it, and then started doing smaller peaks and getting bigger and bigger. And then I was like, okay, I'm ready for Everest. And you find a company. There's tons of companies that run expeditions. They take care of the logistics, the food, the permits, all that stuff.
So these are professional people that go up and down all the time.
Yeah, and they've done it, for 20 years, you know, and
they're not even like, they get to the summit, they don't even look around. They're like, all right, let's turn around.
Yeah. I mean, some of these guys that I've climbed with have summited like 13 times. So it's no big deal.
How much does it cost to get on an adventure like that?
It's very expensive.
I imagine.
It can range, and obviously within the range, you're paying for quality and safety. Some people can do it for as cheap as $20,000, which I wouldn't recommend. But you can go as expensive as $100,000, which is crazy to me. But some people do it. I went with more of a reasonable, I know this is not reasonable to most people, but $40,000.
Well, I mean, you climb Mount Everest. It's like literally, that's it. They use that as an example. Like, that is a metaphor for doing the best thing.
Yeah.
You know, so
Mount Everest of whatever.
I don't know if you can put a price tag on an experience like that. But right. it also sounds like something you want to pay a little extra money. You don't want to want to do this one cheap.
No, and some people do, and you hear these tragic stories of frostbite or being left for dead. You know, it's not the way you want to do it.
What do you remember? Like, what's it like up there?
I mean, first of all, it's absolutely beautiful. I mean, it's the type of thing that you just can't believe, and just makes you want to cry, you know. It's you see the curvature of the earth.
Oh my
just
god.
The glow on these mountains when the sun's coming up, you can't describe it, you know. The best part about it for me is just how humbling it is, you know. You hear about Everest and you can see it in pictures and watch shows about it, but then when you stand at the base of that thing and you look up, you're just like, what is this world that we live in? And like, who the hell am I, you know? Like, my life is not a big deal. Like, you just, that's what I love about these expeditions. You just go out there and you remove yourself from everything, and it's just you climbing this mountain and with your thoughts, and everything's just so simple, you know?
You said you practice every day, so I assume you were practicing even on Everest. Is that correct? The memory.
Yeah, exactly.
Does it get harder as the air gets thinner?
And that was kind of the reason I did it, is because I wanted to see, like, you're going up to places where you're not getting as much oxygen into your brain.
Right,
what is
right.
that going to do? And actually, it in some senses, for my cards, for example, I got faster the higher I went, and which was super counterintuitive, because you think, okay, you're going to get dumber as you go. And for the most part, you do. Your decision-making process isn't as quick or as sound, but for some reason, these techniques are just so strong that I guess they – you know, they're very difficult to break. I think a big part of it is that, like I said, it's so simple out there. It's just you and no distractions. That focus is when I'm sitting there in my tent just saying I'm going to memorize a deck of cards, I have nothing else going through my mind, just that. So I think it's a lot easier to come up with the pictures and to go through your memory palace and things like that.
Right, right. So tell me more about the organization. Like, what is currently going on with Climb for Memory?
Yeah, so we're right now trying to figure out the next big climb. I just got back from my second.
Yeah, what do you do after you climb Everest?
Well, I lost a lot of weight, so eat a lot. That's number one. And then, you know, when I come back, I'm usually like, I never want to climb again. It was so demanding and miserable, but a week after that, I'm like, what's next? What's the next big peak I'm going to go for? So we're trying to figure that out, and then we'll start pushing the fundraising and different events for that.
What do those funds go to? How do you support Alzheimer's?
Yeah, so we work with the Alzheimer's Association, and specifically I work a lot with the Southeast Florida chapter down here. I'm in Miami. And so the majority of the funds go towards them and their efforts.
That's cool. I mean, I think it's really cool how you were able to, you know, you tried a lot of different things, you found something you enjoyed that you were good at, and now you're doing it and you're harnessing it to do this like great thing that also speaks back to the origin of why you started this journey. So I think you're and on top of all that, you climbed Mount Everest. So I am very impressed. I think you're just the coolest.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. But you know, I know it sounds like so big and crazy, but look, if one thing gets across is that I'm just someone who, you know, had a moment where I was like, I want to do something, and then in small steps, you know, over time, it's not instant, I worked at this memory thing and the climbing, and then you get to these big stages, you know, that anybody can do that with really anything they want, as long as they're disciplined and have that desire, you know?
Do you think that people, society in general, that our memories are getting worse, or maybe memories becoming less important because we're offloading, you know, we're outsourcing so much of that to computers and specifically cell phones. Like, right. I used to know phone numbers. I used to know birthdays. Now that's in my contact. All that's in my contacts. If I forget something, it's not a problem. I don't worry about forgetting anything because everything I knew and more is accessible within seconds. Does that, like, affect our memories as a society?
Oh, for sure. And, I mean, you just said it. You noticed, you know, that now you don't remember phone numbers. Back when we had, you know, we had to maybe look up a number in a book, we knew more in our mind. Like, you just knew a bunch by rote memory, you know, by muscle memory on the dial pad.
Which I still know. Like, I still know the phone numbers of my friends growing up. Yeah.
Isn't that crazy? Yeah. That just shows, I mean, that you could do it, because back then you had to know that number or else you were going to have to spend a lot of time trying to find the number every time. So that just goes back to that whole, you know, making it important and focus to memorize something better. That's why those stick. And because we don't have to do that anymore, of course, none of that, all that goes out the window.
Do you think that's necessarily bad?
I think it's bad. I mean, obviously, it allows you to do more with your mental space, I guess. But I just feel like the more it forces us to rely on more things, you know, and not use our brain. I'm a big fan of trying to struggle with holding things in the mind and having to calculate things. Like, even if it's hard for me, I like to do it because I think it's you get better at it the more you do it. And if you're not doing it, then it's just gonna, I don't know, get lazier and fatter.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, it's the opposite of what we were talking about before. Just because you can't see it doesn't mean it's not happening.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
yeah.
Nelson, I really enjoyed hearing about this. It's fascinating stuff, and it's crazy that, like, it's all up here in my head just kind of waiting to be unlocked. Like, this isn't something, right, where I need to go out and buy a guitar to start practicing. Like,
it's,
I can,
there,
just do this. I'm wondering if you could put an exclamation point on this whole conversation, kind of show off a little. Maybe I read you some random numbers and you recite them back to me?
Sure, yeah.
Now, obviously, no one can see us, and clearly, you could be here, you could be at home with a pen writing these down. I think people are just going to have to, and I'm going to have to take you, both listeners and myself are going to have to take you at your word that you are not doing that. And beyond that, there are many videos of you doing this online, so, like,
sure,
you don't, I know you don't have to, but I still want to hear it.
Okay, yeah.
So, that's how good. Does this work? What should we do?
So, write down a 30-digit number or so.
Okay.
So a digit, so single digit. So 30 of those.
Okay.
Just so I know how many you're
going to
give me.
I'm just pounding on the number pad right now.
Okay, cool. And then when I'm ready, I guess I'll say go, and then just try to give them to me at 1 per second. Not super fast, but
7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 30. Okay, sorry, I want to get 30 digits. Okay, I have a 30-digit number. I typed like a 90-digit number. I have no idea what a 30-digit number even looks like, apparently. But now I have it. I'm going to read it to you one number a second. You ready? This is going to be fascinating radio for the first
time. Give me 1 second. So right now I got to find, I'm mentally choosing one of my memory palaces to store this in.
Yeah,
so
please walk us through. I want to know everything about what's going through your head. Please, you know, talk it out. Are your eyes closed when you're doing this? Like, are you trying, is it like a Professor X style where you're like thinking real hard with your eyes closed?
I'm going to close my eyes, yeah. Okay. And, you know, we can do this. I'll just, maybe I can stop you along the way and say, like, what image I created right
there.
Yeah,
please. I think that's going to be way more interesting than just 30 seconds of me reading numbers, so please talk
sure.
us through this. Okay.
Okay. So
ready?
I'm in my high school. Okay. Let's go with the first. Go for it.
5, 7, 8, 9, 2, 1.
Okay. So that is Egon serving shit on a platter. So basically, 5, 7 is Egon from Ghostbusters. 8, 9 is a server friend of mine, but her action is serving something on a platter, and 21 is just shit.
I love this. I'm having so much fun right now. 5.
Yeah.
6.
Yeah.
8. Mm-hmm. 5.
Yeah.
7. 8.
Okay, so that's Edward Scissorhands having a sandwich with a slice of pizza in it. Yeah.
That sounds awesome. I just want to see that.
Just a sandwich with a slice of pizza in it. And that's, I put that in the parking lot of this school.
That's just a straight up good idea for a movie, for an Edward Scissorhands too. All right, I'm going to keep going. I'm worried. I don't want to slow you down.
No, we're good.
Okay, 7. I'm so much more worried than you are. 9. 6. 2, 1, 3.
Okay, so that's Wayne Rooney, soccer player. He's driving a bus into a thong, to a massive thong. All right, let's keep going.
2, 1, 0, 8, 9, 7.
Okay, so that's Brian. And as you notice, I'm doing this 6-digit thing, not the 7. It's easier when I'm doing that audio numbers to use the 6-digit system. Hang on, 2, 1, 2, 8, 7. It's Brian playing with himself, and on his genitalia, there's ball and chain.
Just one question, who's Brian?
Oh, he's a good friend of mine.
Awesome, okay. I'm going to keep going. 0, yep. Mm-hmm. 5, mm-hmm. 6, 8, 7, 9.
Okay, so that's Abe Lincoln in a wheelchair playing soccer.
That is all 30 digits.
That's 30, yeah. Okay, so let me quickly review this, make sure I have the images in my head. Okay. So 5, 7, 8, 9, 2, 1. 5, 6, 8, 5, 7, 8, 7, 9, 6, 2, 1, 3, 2, 1, 0, 8, 9, 7, 0, 5, 6, 8, 7, 9. Yeah.
I feel like I don't even have to tell you that is absolutely correct. That was ridiculous. Totally awesome. Even more impressed.
Check this out, though. So with the technique, you can do it backwards, too, just by walking in reverse. You want me to do that?
Yeah, why not?
All right, so 9, 7, 8, 6, 5, 0, 7, 9, 8, 0, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 6, 9, 7, 8, 7, 5, 8, 6, 5, 1, 2, 9, 8, 7, 5.
There it is. this is incredible. Nelson, how can people find out more about this online? How can they support your charity?
Yep. So my charity's website is climbformemory.org. And I have a blog in there. I talk about memory, climbing, Alzheimer's, things like that. And they can make a donation on there. If they're more interested in learning about these techniques and the art and history of the art of memory, I really recommend this book called Moonwalking with Einstein. It's by Joshua Foer, and he was a journalist who kind of did the same thing I did, but I did it later. He came to cover the competition one year, I think in 2005, and then somebody said, oh, anybody can learn how to do this, and he spent a year training and won the next year.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's really cool. I think more than a few people are going to hear this. They're going to want to learn more about it. They're going to be checking that out. Nelson, thank you so much for talking this evening. This is incredible. It's really fascinating stuff.
Thank you so much for having me, Jeff.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.